Hello. Hello. I'm up. Hello. Hi. We're actually recording something in here for about 20 minutes. Is it possible for you to like take a quick break and then come back out, or are you like? Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. I
was not expecting that.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you very much.
From the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. This is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. We have a fun show tonight. Carl Baker from Spotlight is here. Bill Martin is here. But before we get to all that, we have a friend here, sort of a surprise guest, who is once again in the news. Medina, what have you been up to? Have you been up to anything interesting lately?
What else is going on? I don't know. You want to tell the joke you came up with earlier?
Yeah. So you, just made an appearance on a big program, what we call a program. And many people,
the British terminology in the studio is really,
because is it a show? Really, is it a, it's online, it's on YouTube. On YouTube.
It's the number one comedy podcast in the world.
Correct. And what I was trying, so there were a few people, not many, but if there were a few people who were curious about the choice that you made. And I told those people, like, imagine if Johnny Carson was on YouTube for millennials. Every comedian would go there regardless of what they thought about Johnny. And that's what it is. So I actually told somebody, like, would I go on Joe Rogan? Of course.
Absolutely.
What am I, insane? Of course I would do that.
Yeah.
So you were playing some shows in Texas. And so you went over to Joe Rogan, I guess, protege. Call him a protege. Tony Hinchcliffe's number one comedy podcast in the world, Kill Tony, at the Comedy Mothership in Austin. They pull names out of a hat to go on and do a minute and then talk to the panel. And you did it.
Yeah. My name got pulled out of the bucket. I was the second bucket pull of the night.
When they said, like, Medina, you're doing it, were you like, okay, fuck it, here we go?
Sure. And in Medina, you know, internal monologue.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You work clean, but in your mind.
Oh.
Or you don't say it, but in your mind. Do you say fuck in your mind? Like to yourself?
In the moment, I actually, if my recollection is correct, I heard my name. I started running towards the front so they wouldn't think I wasn't there. And I was just going, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. And I was like looking around like, is this really happening? And I didn't know anybody there, so they probably all were just like, we hate her. We wish our name got called, which is how I felt when they called other names previous. So, yeah, it was crazy. And I reviewed my minute. I had written out my script for myself in December, and I had reviewed it, and I was like, all right, if I get picked, these are, you know, like, you got 1 minute. These are the couple jokes you can hit. And I literally, like, reviewed it once and then put it away because I figured I wouldn't need it. And then once I got backstage, they took all my stuff and I was like, let me review it real quick. Don't have my phone. It's in the bin out there. Like, so I just had to go off what I could remember. I didn't go over time. That was one of my main concerns going into
it. Yeah. I mean, you hit like a good material that if people have heard your act before, they might've heard parts of it, but you change it up a little bit to hit that, to get it in that time.
Yeah.
And of course, It murdered. But what it did was, like, the thing about comedians used to be, like, you do your 5 minutes on the Tonight Show, but if Johnny invited you to the couch with Ed, you know, then you were kind of in. And so really what you have to do is, after you do the minute, you have to see what kind of reaction you get from the panel.
Yes.
And the panel was smitten. I think it was fair to say they were smitten.
Yeah.
You got that engagement from Tony, who sort of runs the thing. And he was able to then sort of work with you and give you some stuff that you could riff on. So you had a whole riff, you know, 5-10 minute riff with the panel.
Yeah, I think I was up there for like 11 minutes or so. So like a minute of comedy and then the rest was, yeah, just riffing and they call it an interview, but it's really just them riffing and like sometimes roasting people. Like, I was kind of worried.
Yeah, because if you bomb, you get shit on hard, real hard.
Yeah. Sometimes if you don't bomb, they still roast you for certain stuff. Especially if you're like, if they interview you and you're trying too hard to get punchlines in, you're not answering the questions. Sometimes they'll just be like, "All right, like, dude, you had your minute. Like, just answer the questions."
Yeah.
So I was trying to answer in a funny way to, you know, get the crowd to engage the crowd without doing too much. And it was a strange setup because everyone, you know, the sold out crowd is in front of you. But then the panel is to my left, and they're all in a row. So I'm trying to see them as they're asking questions.
And you have a band behind you.
Yeah.
You have a live band as well.
Amazing band, by the way.
Yeah.
And actually, the guitarist reached out to me after and was like, "You were awesome. You should come out to our gig tomorrow. I'll put you on the list." So I went to their show the next night and had the most phenomenal, insane, fever dream-esque night of my life, probably, where there was a dude on a horse who just showed up.
That's like, Austin Chess, Texas shit.
Yeah, dude on a horse, Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad, like the character Hank Schrader, Dean Norris, I think.
Yeah.
He just was like at the bar, chilling, hanging out with his girlfriend.
That's weird.
They played Chicago 25 or 64.
Sitting cross-legged on the floor.
So good. And like Hank got the mic somehow right after and was like, "These are some talented mother effers. Like, give them money."
Motherfuckers, let's give them some money. All right? Let's give them some money.
It was such a crazy night.
That's wild.
But yeah, it was a crazy experience. Really, really, you know, fun. So far, the response from folks online has been overwhelmingly positive. Somebody messaged me on Twitter yesterday and said, "Finally, a politician who's normal." I might print that out and put it up in my wall.
Well, again, that was like the
big compliment.
Theme. That's get a poster and put it in your office.
Yeah, it's like finally a politician who's not like a total
people
freak.
People don't get it. They don't really get it. I did want to let you tell the story about like sort of how you got there because it was a classic. I'm like an old comedy head because I'm like an older guy. So I remember when we thought it was really good, whatever, like Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy and Carlin, Leary. Dennis, you're a Dennis Leary guy. You're younger than me. But you had shows booked in Houston. But to do this, you took a bus to Austin and back.
Yeah,
can you
talk
about
the tour bus? That's what I've been calling it.
The tour bus. The tour. Yeah. So you're on what they call the Greyhound comedy tour.
Yeah. So if Greyhound gets a hold of this, I would love to be get some sponsorship there. So I have a really good friend who lives outside of Fort Worth, and my sister lives outside of Dallas. So whenever I go out to Texas, I spend time with family and friends and try to get stage time, and like get into new spaces out there. So I did this in December and then I did it again a couple weeks ago now where I book a ticket on the Greyhound and, whatever time is the time that's going to work out is when I get on there. So this time I took the bus from Fort Worth, Texas, 7:25 in the morning, was on the bus for like 5 hours, stopped in a couple towns along the way to Austin. I got off in Austin, but it went all the way to San Antonio. And honestly, pretty awesome experience, gotta say. You could always, if you have the money, rent a car or something, but like Austin is compact enough that you can get around on foot for the most part. So I just take the bus in and then hang out and, meet comics and try to get invited
to concerts and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly...
You were in the green room. You were in the green room having little vodkas with Joe Rogan, probably.
Dude, this is part of this how crazy this night was, right? The band loved my performance the night before so much that during the middle of their set, when they had a little set break, they're like, "You want to perform?" Does that sound familiar to you, Rob? Do you remember first, this?
Yeah, because we did a Delaware Call fundraiser at Nomad, and we had James and Jen from Edgewater Avenue, who also did the
shout out Edgewater Avenue,
who also did the Storm the Fort song about the Knights of Labor song for Carl, the original. Well, they did a take of the song. But in between their set at Nomad, you did 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Was that like your first?
Yeah.
That was the first time you did it in front of people?
Yeah. And you asked me, do you want to do 5 minutes? And I was like, no, what? No, scared, huh? And you were like, you can't say no to stuff like this. You got to get out there. And I was like, you're right. Okay. And so when they asked me, do you want to do time at this, you know, concert? People have paid money to listen to music. Do you want to, in the middle of it, tell them jokes and see if they'll laugh? I wanted to say no, but I heard you saying you don't do that. I literally told them the story of the fundraiser at Nomad, and I was like, so with that in mind, yes, I will do time, thank you. And they went over to another comic who was there who I didn't know prior to, and they're like, do you want to do some time? And he was like, nah, like, this isn't set up for comedy. Like, he said all the reasons that went through my head, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, Medina said she'd do it, so.
Yeah, I guess, like, it just depends, like, what people are doing. If you're working on 20 or 30 minutes, fuck it, go. You know, if you are doing something, if your head's somewhere else, maybe you don't. But in my mind, if you get the opportunity, especially in the situation you were in, I mean, you just did Kill Tony, you fucking killed. And then they're like, you want to do 5 minutes here? Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people were in the audience?
I'd say it's probably like 40 people, 40, something like that.
Yeah,
it was honestly very similar setup to Nomad.
Okay, like a club scene, like a little club scene.
Yeah, like a little, like in a little.
Perfect.
It was awesome. I did 3 minutes. They liked it. You know, I was in and out. I didn't drag it out or anything. Hit the classics. Did a little improv based off the fact that it was the middle of a concert, but it was great. You know,
did some crowd work. Made fun of what people do for a living.
No, I didn't do all that.
Hey, what do you guys?
I didn't
guys
do all
do?
That. You know, I just was like, you know, I know you guys aren't here to hear me tell jokes, and you probably want to dance, and you can't dance to punchlines, so I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then next day, got on the Greyhound bus and went right back up to Fort Worth and got to see Texas from the window and work on some material while I was, you know, on the bus, and got to overhear conversations from different types of people.
Work that in.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, It was real.
Yeah.
You know?
So last question, because you and I talked about this, and I think this is one thing that people are, like, sort of interested in, but you did extremely well. But I'm familiar with the show because I'm familiar with people who either hate or critique the show because of just the general sort of fall from grace that the Joe Rogan sphere has had in the last 6 months. Maron, you know, fucked with him, going out the door. People were like, Theo Vaughn just bombed. He's bombing every show. He doesn't know what to do. The Segura and the other guy are kind of bombing out. So it's sort of like everything's sort of bombing out. So I was wondering how they were going to interact with you.
Mm.
Because there was a couple times that they went into, like, the sort of millennial conservative bro sort of nonsense. Now, again, I was like, well, how far are they going to go with it? Like, what are they going to say? I wonder what you're going to be. Like, you always tell me, like, the stuff I can't say because you're here. You know?
Wow, there's a whole rider. Like, I come in here.
There's
and
a whole
I
rider.
Have a long
folks.
Long list, like Kamala Harris
folks,
or something. Come on.
First of all, we have a very famous person.
Kind of party,
we have a very famous person in here now. So she comes in here with a whole rider. This is like performing.
On.
This is like doing 5 minutes in Saudi Arabia. You can't say this. You can't say that. You can't say the other thing.
I am not like that.
No, so this is all a big lie.
That's
so
wild.
The point is that I know you. Come on. This is a show. We're doing a bit.
Somebody back me up.
How
There's so
dare
many people
you?
In this room right now.
No one's saying anything. None of you motherfuckers should say one word.
Wow. But I'm the one who comes in and runs the show. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But I think there are going to be people who were like, why would you do this, or why would you sort of, and there was nothing in that set that you did for 10 or 15 minutes that was in any should be in any way problematic for you at all. You murdered, you interacted, you actually, and again, this is what the biggest thing to me was, that you piqued their interest. Like, you engage, they were engaged from the beginning.
Yeah.
They were like, this is your first appearance. This is your maiden, because they were already saying, like, yeah, this is somebody who probably should come back.
Yeah.
They were already sort of engaged with it. Now, a lot of the people were, like, just saying goofy stuff. They didn't know what to say. You know, they're on this panel, and they have to, like, just say dumb shit.
That's part of what's fun about the show, right? It's like, it's...
So you roll with that.
It's a live podcast, right? Like what we're doing right now. So it should feel conversational, and that's what the audience comes for. Like there's super fans that go to every show or as many as they can and like sells out, right? So part of what's fun about it is the fact that it's unpredictable and it's, you don't know who the guests are going to be until they come out right before, and then they're riffing with each other. And so, I mean, I was a little bit nervous because I didn't know where they were going to take it. And I didn't know if I was going to have to, like, be a politician and be like, well, I denounce, you know, what they just said. I don't agree. Like, I'm not going to laugh at that. But also, you don't want to look like a sourpuss when you're in front of a laughing audience. So I was like, this might be a little tricky. But I think it's important for Democrats to go into spaces and not be like, oh, I'm not going to go to the number one comedy podcast in the world because the guy who hosts it said XYZ. Like, if we're going to do that, we're not going to go on any shows. I mean, we could talk about what Anderson Cooper said, right? We could talk about what Van Jones has said.
Who?
Like,
who? Right? It's like the Snoop Dogg.
It's so silly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if I wasn't going to go on any podcast because of something offensive that the host has said, I would never come to the Highlands Bunker.
I was going to say, you would never come here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually when you said you were going you were trying to do, I immediately got it. Like I knew exactly what it was, and I'm glad that it was exactly that. You went to a hugely popular comedy show, and you fucking murdered, and so that's it. That's like I remember you saying weeks ago when we were talking about it, you're like, just kind of doing it for my career. And I'm like, yeah, of course. So yeah, I think it was fantastic.
And I think, you know, having been down there a couple times now, there is this culture that I think because it's known as kind of the brosphere or whatever, there's a lot of comics who go there with that mindset and they think they have to do that to do well. And I did have an experience one of the times that I went where I felt like I wasn't edgy enough for the crowd. And that was kind of like, it was like, okay, well, like maybe I misjudged or like whatever. But last time I was there, completely different. Like every audience that I was in front of was loving the material. I was able to just be myself. And I think that is part of the problem with a market, right, in general, is it looks like everybody likes this, so now everyone's doing this. And yeah, they might like that, but they also might like something else. They just don't know until it's in front of them, right? Like, so I'm just sticking to what's been working and what's authentic to me. I don't get on stage and do a bunch of woke jokes, right? Which, like, somebody in the comments was like, yeah, I read the comments, so please keep commenting. It helps with the engagement. but somebody was like, go woke or go broke or something like that. Go woke, go broke. And then somebody responded and was like, what does that even mean in this context?
Yeah. You're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Because like, it was 1 minute. The one joke that I started with, I am making fun of the fact that the Trump administration is disappearing Americans. Like, that is the premise, that it's bad to do that. But I'm not like, oh, like, I'm a Democrat. Like, no, I'm saying, like, it's scary right now. So these are the silly things that I have to do to prove that I'm American. But besides that, I don't really talk about, like, far left stuff on stage. I talk about things that are relatable to everyone.
Even when it comes up, to be honest, because the whole panel and Tony especially was, like, engaged in what you were doing, when you did say, yeah, we're on totally different ends of the spectrum, but you said something like, yeah, both parties are garbage, and everybody started screaming, like, what, dude, going wild. The crowd's going
shocked.
Fucking crazy.
I got a freaking applause break for that.
Yeah.
And Tony,
because
like,
everybody believes it.
Yeah. Because everybody believes it's true.
It is totally
very popular.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why I'm like back on the soapbox, but that's why Democrats, well, no, not all Democrats. That's why I don't know, what do we call ourselves? Progressives? Socialists?
No.
Whatever.
No, not, none of
families,
those.
Party.
You can call it
people.
That. Look, you might have to call it that for,
like,
for contractual
reasons.
Like, need
to go into these places and actually say, like what Zohran is doing, right? Like,
exactly.
I agree with you. It's too expensive to rent. It's too expensive to buy. It's too expensive to put your kid in childcare. Like, these are all real problems.
Rent a car and drive around Texas. It's too expensive.
It's crazy. Like, I'm a state rep and I'm on the Greyhound bus. Like, I probably looked crazy going into this one Puerto Rican restaurant in Killeen for our little lunch break. Yo, I got off the bus to use the bathroom, only to use the bathroom. And the lady was like, everybody needs to be back at 1:15. And I was like, 1:15? She was like, 1:15. I was like, all right. Because that's like 45 minutes from now. Like, this is a long break. I didn't realize we were taking. So I'm like, let me go get something to eat. Asked the lady in the little train, the little bus stop lady thing. She was like, oh, there's a Puerto Rican spot around the corner. So I go in there and I hadn't taken the cushion off my neck. The travel cushion.
You had the neck pillow.
I had the neck pillow.
You were wearing
on.
The neck pillow.
I had the neck pillow on. I had the headphone. I looked crazy. I had my bag. Because I didn't think, I thought I was running off the bus to get right back on.
Yeah, you didn't know it was like a meal break.
So I'm just like a walking tourist in Killeen, which is not a touristy town in Texas. It's like a military town. Like, but why am I talking about this?
Because
where am I going?
No, I was just saying how cool it was that you took the city. And he said,
like,
it's very expensive.
Yeah, it's just expensive to exist, right? And like, that is a real experience that people should, like, elected officials, if they care about what people are going through, should be tapped into and should be talking about. And, like, I think we're more likely to win elections moving forward if we have candidates that actually are normal, as the guy on Twitter said, right? If I get invited to go on anything, basically, as long as it's not going to be disrespectful and, like, you know, a pointless conversation, I'm going to accept the invitation and I'm going to stick to my values and talk about the issues that are important to my constituents.
Well, there's one more thing that didn't escape my attention, and that is there's a lot of state legislators that want to be important and famous.
Mm.
Some of them are famous for being under investigation for financial malfeasance, potentially, at the Police Athletic League. Some of them pretend that they were the governor. Some of them were the governor and now have to take a demotion to be the mayor. there are a lot of ding-dongs. But the actual popular people, the actual cool people who are actually out in the world and that people like because they're normal and fun and friendly are people like Medina. She just fucking proved it again. So, you know, maybe as we've said for years and years and years, you have to be more like Medina.
Mm.
People say, I can't do it. That's an excuse. We don't want to hear that fucking excuse anymore.
Can we just go back real quick? To
sure.
The audience and me, who's not in the loop. Were there actually people in Delaware who were criticizing you? Like, can we talk about them?
Oh, for this?
Yeah.
Like, for the Kill Tony thing? Oh, not that I'm aware of.
No, okay. I haven't seen any criticism. Okay. What I did hear was like, oh, it's an odd choice. It's like, doesn't that guy suck? Like, it's not a good,
like the woke crowd kind of vibe? Like,
yeah, but not even that.
I was just ready to name and shame them, but if
no. It was
all about transparency.
It was more just like, why did Bernie go on Rogan? Kind of thing. Like,
well, that is like a very, I think, lib take, right? Which is like, oh, you're legitimizing these guys. And like, to your point earlier, Rob, about like, oh, you know, they're all bombing now and da da da. I mean, I don't know if I buy that, honestly. Like, they're having a moment maybe right now, some of them. But also, like, comedy is... I was just talking to a friend yesterday about this, right? And I was like, I'm getting divorced and, like, thinking about my personal life and everything. I was talking to my friend, who's also a comedian. And I was like, yo, I'm just marrying the game. That's what I'm about to do. Like, I'm marrying comedy right now, right? Like, that's my lover. And she was like, oh, well, be careful, because comedy is a fickle lover, which is true, right? Like, you have good days and bad days. You have great shows and you might have a terrible show the same night. Like, it's an art. It's not something that's just like linear And a lot of times people will be like, oh, so-and-so used to be funny. They're not funny anymore. And it's like, they put out 4 specials in 2 years. Like, it's really hard to put together quality material in a short time period. So not saying that I agree with everything that, like, all the comics you listed have put out, but it's not all going to be hits. And I think if we were to cancel or ignore or whatever every comedian or every platform that has platformed bad things, we're talking SNL, we're talking about basically everything. So I just think it's a very short-sighted perspective to take, especially when we're talking about the future of the country. And if we want to win over voters, we need to get in front of them, which means we have to go on platforms that people tap into. And I mean, Kill Tony, the episode that I was on, it's only been 2 days, I think. It's already almost at 1.5 million views.
1.5 million views. For, look, if it's got views, it's the news. That's how we know. Everybody knows that. You need views for it to be news. That does rule.
I mean,
that does. This is going to be weird for me to say, but I do want to say it before we split. I think the issue with the people that I named, or the dynamic anyway, of like podcasters getting too far into like politics,
yeah,
is because they're not doing comedy. They're doing a weird podcast. Like, that's like the Segura, like the Two Bears guys, and the other guy with the mustache, his name I can't remember.
Schultz,
yeah. And Theo Vaughn, and even Kill Tony and Rogan. Yeah. Like, you're right. You got to go out and do comedy. You do 3 shows over a weekend. One of them bombed. 2 of them were good because you learned something about telling this other joke, and you get better and better and better and better. This is what you've done. You know, you went from fucking Nomad for 5 minutes to Kill Tony in like 4 years or whatever.
3.
Probably less.
Yeah. 3. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry for saying counting. That. Who's, yeah. You know
just
what?
Me. Yeah. Just the beginner comic. I had my comedy-versary a couple months ago. So.
But that's what I would say. I would say that you're right. Everything you said about comedy is right. I think the people who are sort of like, people say they're not funny anymore or they don't is because they're like looking at their podcasts, and I don't really, you know.
Honestly, like, I've listened to Theo Vaughn. I've listened to, like, some of them have very engaging, like, entertaining episodes. And as a Democratic elected official who does comedy, I can say, like, I listened to the Trump episode on Theo Vaughn, and I there were parts of it I ran back and listened to again because I was like, this is why people like him. I, as a Democrat, had never seen Trump in a likable, I'd never seen a likable side to him. Right, is what I'm trying to say. When I listened to that interview, I was like, holy crap, he's going to win. Because not only did he get shot and, like, live and have his little, like, hero moment or whatever.
It's kind of a big deal.
Which was like, that's when I was like, oh, he's going to win. But then when he's on Theo Vaughn and he was just, like, funny and normal.
He asked that really, like, thoughtful question about doing cocaine.
Yes.
He was like, do a lot of cocaine? What
would he even do? In that moment. You know what I mean?
Like,
but it was kind of like a different side.
Clip, like, probably 4 times. I made my dad, like, listen to it too. Because it's like, okay, you have to understand. I mean, I'm not going to go like Sun Tzu and all, but like, the Democratic Party doesn't understand its enemy, right?
No,
it doesn't understand it, and it doesn't understand its base.
Nope.
And I think part of it is
neither.
Because they don't.
That's why
want
it's so
to.
Successful. The success of the Democratic Party is not understanding your enemy, or not understanding that you know what your enemy is doing, and not understanding the people who would vote for you but don't because you don't understand either one.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
And I honestly, as much as I hate Trump, I listened to that episode and I was like, oh man, like he's kind of likable. He's kind of funny, like thoughtful in moments. Like it's like, ah, okay, so this is a problem. And then you have somebody like Kamala Harris as our nominee, who's like, I'm going to have this long list of things that you can't talk about. And we can't have an interview that's the normal length that you do for every other candidate because I can't keep up a lie that long. That's basically what it was, right? Like,
She cannot riff.
I bet she could.
She probably
you're right.
could.
But probably
like,
not at that point in the campaign.
And not in a way that's going to work, right? Like, it's too risky. If you're not being authentic, you have to stick to a script. And that only goes so long. Like, unless we get George Clooney in as nominee or something, somebody who can memorize the script and really make you believe it, like, it's not going to work. And so, you know, I think go on whatever show, whatever. Like, I hate Bill Maher. Like, I hate him. Like, I might hate him the most of any person.
He's very hateable.
If he were to invite me on...
He's a very hateable person.
The Republicans.
You know, new rule. You're gonna be a progressive Democrat and go on Kill Tony.
Oh my god!
No, he's extremely annoying.
Well, he's just like, I feel like he's just a bigot.
Like, yes. he has been for decades.
Yeah,
like,
and that's the thing. Like, if he were to invite me on, that'd be a show I would have rules. Like, I'd be like, we're not gonna get into it about my religion, and you're not gonna sit here and talk about how like Muslims are barbarians or something, and like uniquely barbaric compared to other ethnic and religious groups. Or
it's weird.
Like, that would be a line, right? But if it was like, oh, Bill Maher wants Medina to come on and talk about being a politician and doing comedy, I'm going to say yes. Like, he has an audience that I think I can resonate with, that might be like, I might even throw in a line and say, Bill Maher's a bigot and here's why. And they might actually be like, oh, snap, she's right. Like, what are we doing? Like, it's like, what do we want to do? Like, debate club or something? Like, with our friends at home? Why? Like, it's like the nerdiest thing I've ever heard of. It seems like that's what they want to do, the Democrats.
Didn't.
Yeah.
Medina, thank you for coming over and doing a quick hit and talking about your new experience. Not for nothing. Like I said, we talked, and I really thought it was an excellent performance. Just the way, and again, you have the set, but it was more about the engagement afterwards, them being sort of interested. And I think what you said is exactly right. You have something that you could do for the Bill Maher audience. You have something you could do for the Kill Tony audience. You have something you could do for this concert audience from the live what you're doing is resonating with a bunch of different people as you refine the craft of it, as it gets refined and refined and refined. And the fact that you can kill in front of all of these different people, and you kill on the floor in Dover, that place.
Floor in Dover.
Shoot,
not for nothing. Two episodes of Chapo Trap House, too.
Two episodes of Chapo. Did you talk to Felix today?
Felix said I did a good job.
That's awesome.
That was high praise.
Shit.
High praise.
There's a recent Chapo Trap House. I remember the one from a couple years ago.
No, I just was messaging with
within
him.
Within the past year,
you've done two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You did one for the financial, for SB, the latest, the latest corporate thing. So, Medina went on and did
got
that.
Got my Super Bowl joke too.
Oh, yeah, you were Go Birds. You were Go Birds and up and down all over the
place. Dude, did you hear the Go Birds in the audience in Texas?
Yes, you said you were from the Philly area, Delaware, and somebody yelled Go Birds.
Yeah, same thing happened in Houston.
There
was a random Birds fan in the audience.
There's freaks all over the place. Some are in the studio right now.
Well, can I get one more joke in before I leave?
Of course.
So, you guys have probably heard people say politics is Hollywood for ugly people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to my Instagram and Twitter DMs, I got to go to Hollywood.
What?
The DMs are disgusting.
People are hitting the DMs.
The DMs are disgusting. That's what
I mean, look. First of all, you shouldn't be reading the comments or the DMs. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
I
don't
have
a team yet.
Look. I'm getting uncomfortable.
One of these days, I'll have a team.
You need a team.
Yeah.
Look, Greyhound, give us a sponsorship. Medina needs a goddamn team. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Have fun, guys.
Thank you. Cheers.
What a pleasure.
Left is best. Folks, we're still in the Shadow Raffer Tower. Still now. We're still behind enemy lines, as you probably have heard. And this is definitely the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. I'll tell you what, though. The belly of the Delaware Beast, is it shifting towards the Triangle neighborhood? There's been a lot of talk of the Triangle lately. There's been...
Three sides.
There's been BlackRock... There's been the Meyer campaign and Tyler Technologies. There's been...
Those two are one and the same.
Right. Well, that's... See, now you're going further. Now you're doing four-dimensional chess. But before we get there, we have to establish that this whole thing was orchestrated at the highest levels of the Triangle Neighborhood Association. Carney's involved. I hate to tell you this, Bill. I'm getting word that Everett could be involved
in it.
True.
It's
in some fashion. I don't know. Ross Flockersy, that guy's involved. Carl's,
what does Ross know?
Carl's parents somehow are involved in it. Everybody in the triangle has been implicated in this investigation. Here's what I do know. Not everybody in the triangle has been implicated, but everybody is under full investigation. The Highlands Bunker is watching.
Well, I feel good for our guest tonight, though. So he technically lives on the outskirts of the triangle.
He's actually in the shadow of the triangle. Yes, right. Well, that's the thing. We're actually we're recruiting Carl Baker to watch what's going on in the triangle.
I think I have to go on my roof, then I can see the triangle.
Perfect. You know what? That works. Carl, hello. How are you?
Good.
What have you been up to?
It's been a long day.
What have you been up to?
I have been working in the news and then taking care of a two-year-old and then working in the news and then taking care of a two-year-old. And my life's boring now.
Are you familiar with the new sort of definition, with the new edict, that if it don't have views, it ain't the news? Are you familiar with that?
I learned that about 20 minutes ago here.
Yeah. But you kind of learned it. You've learned it before, feel like.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. This is the last I'm going to speak of it. Yeah. Have you looked at today or any time this week a report, a spreadsheet, a pivot table, perhaps, maybe just a SQL run? Have you looked at clicks under stories? Like, how many clicks did this story? How long did you look at? What do they call analytics? Your stats. Have you looked at analytics today or any day this week?
This is internal information, I suppose, but we did have a meeting about it this week. Was it today or was it yesterday? Shoo,
analytics, bro. Yeah. Because listen, now here's my problem with this. You just said the first time you heard the phrase, if it ain't got views, it ain't the news. You said you just heard it 20 minutes ago. But now what you're telling me is that you heard it at a business meeting just this afternoon. So I think we're poking holes in your story.
I'm the one that's supposed to do that.
See? You taught me everything I know.
There you go.
I mean, it's funny. Here's what I really want to talk about. And we had a nice conversation with Medina, so now we can really get into it. Because you're a good person to talk to about with us. So last week, Barry Weiss... Mm-hmm. Who, if people probably know, was a sort of a weird lady who was at the New York Times. She both at the same time, which I actually respect this, because she was both at the same time a free speech activist and trying to get people fired for speech.
Funny how that works.
It's funny because this podcast, what is it? We are both anti-corruption and pro-corruption. We are both conservative and liberal at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so when I found out that she was both anti-free speech and pro-free speech, I was like, she gets it. She gets it. Like, I knew she got it. But she was a weird, like, editor at the New York Times, and everybody hated her. But
kind of an embodiment of present-day Austin, Texas.
Medina. Sorry, we were just talking about Austin.
Yeah, she has Austin brain for sure.
But because she was like a institutional editorial supporter at the Times of like the intellectual dark web and all of these freaks, these like Silicon Valley tech freaks. She was able to parlay that when she quit into this weird, like, University of Austin, Texas, and the Free Press, this weird Substack. But because she does the bidding of very wealthy people, they just were like, hey, how about we buy your Substack for $200 million? She's probably like, sure. How about we acquire all of these media companies and we make you the editor of CBS News? Great. How about you just do the same shit you've been doing, and there you go. And I find that interesting, and number one, I find that you probably have an opinion about this on the greater scheme of things. But I also think this kind of stuff is applicable to us here in our little shire of Delaware. So first of all, I'll let you give your spiel about whatever you think about CBS News or Barry Weiss or the state of journalism in America, and then we'll get on the local shit.
It's a big question. I'm concerned about the state of CBS and journalism. I mean, I was never impressed with CBS much in past years anyway, but yeah, we'll see what direction it goes now. It is the question to look at with whenever there is a takeover of a publication is at what point and will individual reporters not be able to work independently? And I think in TV it's different anyway because there's so many hands involved in a particular story. So I honestly can't really comment on the process of how a story comes to fruition on TV, but in print it's, you know, for example, I've been kind of watching the Baltimore Sun a lot over the last year just to see is the new owner there going to
put his thumb on it. There?
It's the guy who owns Sinclair, and I can't remember
his name. Classic, that yeah. guy. Yeah, that's Sinclair is the classic move.
And to be at least, I mean, I probably should have followed it closer. It doesn't look like he has at this point. I don't see them doing any like kick-ass investigations. Maybe I missed them. But honestly, I haven't been very impressed with the Baltimore Banner either. So
that's the fully independent paper?
Yeah, but it's also owned by a big, you know, a rich dude in Baltimore.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I guess this was my...
It's nonprofit, though.
I see.
And it's... Yeah, but here's my... So that was sort of the segue, a perfect segue into kind of what I wanted to talk about. Like even the Washington Post, like Bezos owns that, and they're still, I mean, they still suck in the sense that like the New York Times, like it's still just a middle of the road thing. And whatever they have done, like Bezos was like, I don't want the editorial page bad-mouthing capitalism. Okay, whatever. So that's a joke. But I don't think the paper's done anything like explicitly ridiculous.
And the one thing I'd say, I mean, readers of papers, understandably, they will judge its content by the opinion page, by the editorials that are written. And I'm because of my job, I focus more on the news.
Yeah.
That's produced,
interesting. I want to put a pin in that because I do want to talk about that because we've had a little couple conversations about that in the past, but. I want to talk about first this idea, like everybody, and I've had this conversation with people like Allison Levine, Jake Owens, fucking
coincidentally,
Lex. I think Lex. I don't even know where that guy is. I haven't heard from him in weeks.
Rollerblading
in
Philly.
That guy's guy's rollerblading on the moon.
He's in the Court of Chancery public terminal right now.
Yeah, it's probably.
He's wearing cutoff jean shorts.
He's listening to this in the terminal.
But everybody, and this is why it was so interesting when you made the comment about the Banner and the Sun. Everybody has an agenda of some sort. Everybody's backed by something. Whether it's like, you know, tech bro millionaire freaks, or whether it's clicks on AI slop, or whether it's clicks on actual like advertisements or whatever, or whether it's a nonprofit that's just totally like plugged into like the liberal grant institutional cycle, whatever it is, it's something. And like, and that's what was so interesting about you saying that, because people like they on one hand will judge who owns a newspaper or CBS News or something, but they never really look at podcasts or independent media even. Like, what is independent? Like, is Barry Weiss on Substack independent? Is the Free Press independent? Not really. You know, it's just, it's an interesting question because and I wish people would talk about it more at not just the level of like Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, but that everybody's accountable to somebody.
Well, independent generally, I mean, Tom is, you don't have a boss. You are a self-employed journalist, right?
Yeah, but that's like
saying... you're on Substack or...
Sure.
And there are lots of them who...
But let me give you an example.
Make money.
How about Matt Taibbi?
Sure.
Matt Taibbi used to be somebody who talked about a variety of different subjects, was very good in the about the financial crisis, wrote a book about Eric Garner, wrote a book, was also a very good sort of political campaign person where he would go to follow the campaigns like Hunter Thompson used to do. But lately, because his whole he's had some sort of and maybe they were bullshit controversies. I'm not going to make a comment on them one way or the other. But because he's had those controversies, he's been completely sucked into writing a Substack for a specific group of about 10,000 people.
Right.
They pay for it.
And they pay
for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the idea that there's anybody who
sure.
And again, now there are people who are independent. Who just do whatever
you're independent
do.
If you don't make any money, basically.
Well, it kind of depends.
I mean, truthfully.
It kind of depends. Yeah. I mean, like, what are you... I would say that there are some independent that... I mean, people pay for, like, drop site, like Scahill and Ryan Grimm. And I think they've proven over decades that they're going to do reporting that they're going to do. Like, they never change. People are paying for them to do the thing they always did. And they're doing it off-grid, however you want to say. So that's actually, okay, we've analyzed that. That looks pretty good. Now we'll analyze Taibbi. Well, he's kind of changed his whole tune for basically a very narrow subset. So now we've analyzed. But people don't look at it. Everything's independent. It's just independent. You're on Substack, you're independent. You got a podcast, you're independent. I'm independent. The call's independent. But everybody's got something, and I feel like when people can be more clear about it, it would be a lot more helpful.
Or it's just a meaningless word.
Well, but, I mean, independent maybe.
Independent maybe. I mean, I think where we're going with this conversation is you see certain stories and you can call out the bullshit in the story. You're like, that they didn't ask the right questions. The framing of this is clearly supporting some particular power structure that that publication or that author might prefer. And when you see that, society has to call it out and have that conversation about this story is not well done. And whether or not it's an independent or publication or not, if they're producing good work, then I guess
that's fair. I wouldn't, and it's fair enough because
I guess what I'm saying, just have these conversations about. Yeah. Pick apart stories.
And I don't think, maybe this is a good time to get into like the commentary and editorial part of it. Because I don't even think it's like, oh, you didn't ask the right questions in the story or you don't see it the right way. I think that's part of it. But the other part of it is feeling obligated to, like, if the narrative is X, we have to report somehow. Somehow this framing has to be on the narrative we're being told. If there's a series of hearings, mm-hmm. It's not a special session.
No, it's a series of four hearings.
Hypothetically, because apparently the third hearing they should can it.
We're kicking it down the
lane. So there could be a reschedule. There still could be.
This is news here.
Well, we don't know. We don't know. Series of hearings, not a special session. But whatever. You know, regardless of whether the people who go there show any aptitude of understanding what the situation is, whatever they say, that's the news. Because we're already like, they're doing the thing. They're going to Dover and they're saying like Senator Hoffner and Cindy Romer, they're saying stuff. And so what they're saying, that's the story somehow. And it's not. But people are like tied into that part of it, I think, where like,
I mean, why Jake is it, Owens, Jake why Owens is told, it not, I guess,
why is it not?
Okay. What senators say?
Have they demonstrated, do you think that any buddy on that special hearing, are they a committee? They're a special committee doing a series of hearings, a joint committee
on ruining my life,
on ruining Bill's life. Just stop the insanity. You don't know what you're talking about. Stop ruining Bill's life. No, like, has anybody on that panel demonstrated any aptitude to sort of understand what's going on. No. Now, there's different reasons for that. Obviously, Brian Townsend is a Yale-trained attorney, probably understands what's going on, but he has political reasons where he has to, like, do whatever he's doing. Like, Senator Hoffner, Cindy Romer, Buxton, they don't know, and they don't even know what they're talking about. Like, you can tell when you're looking at it, they don't know what they're talking about. The same thing happens with the corporate bills. Like, we have to establish, we never establish whether or not the people who are the news know what they're talking about. Because they, because they're there, automatically are the news. So if they're doing it, that's the news. Now, they could be doing something very stupid that makes no sense, but we can't say that because that's the news. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
you're not arguing against not putting on the record that this person who was elected to what we have decided is an important position, what they said. You're arguing that the framing of how we say the what they said
is it is, yes, exactly, okay. Exactly right. Okay. I don't see enough of the sort of like, okay, this was what was said, this is what they did, because I think you're right. I mean, you have to report on what's going on. But there's not a like, okay, this person asked these questions, well, they're irrelevant because of X, Y, and Z. That doesn't even make any sense. So then, okay, then the next person asked these questions, they actually kind of seemed drunk. They didn't even, that math didn't even work out. So, okay, next person. But it's just like, it's just reported. Well, this is the quote of this person. They said this. Well, like, we could do a little bit of reporting and prove why that doesn't even make any sense. But nobody does that because they said it. And then the other person said this. And then, like, I guess I'm a little sore, too. And I have to give Jess a shout out here. That the big story for the first of the series, the first test of the test series, the big story was that Matt made a unilateral decision to push this letter that everybody was going to get that was going to trigger this huge movement of appeals and questions. If we just would have gotten this letter, if Matt would have just let this letter go out when it was supposed to go out. And then Jess was like, yeah, I went back and looked at the PowerPoint and the letter was always supposed to go out in November. And then like 2 days later, like, yep, there we go. Wow, wow. Okay, what's the next? You know, it's just like, these are not complicated fucking questions is what I'm saying.
Right. I mean, so for
why is it so difficult to pull this information out of the ether?
Sorry, what information are you specifically talking about in that sentence?
Specifically like this. Like, why is it so difficult to, I'll give you another example.
Well, let's talk on this example. Or go ahead, go ahead.
I'll give you another example. Maybe you don't like this one.
I like this one. That's what I'm talking about.
Bill's very uncomfortable with this example.
In honor of Kay Baker being here, I'm going to get into a K-hole right now.
I like that. We can get back to it.
Sure.
During the session, somebody asked the House leadership mm-hmm. about the tax brackets.
Okay.
So just like
current income tax brackets in Delaware.
Current income tax brackets that we don't have any. Right. We just have basically the one.
Right.
And so if you make $60,000 or $60,000 and $1, mm-hmm. you pay the same rate as somebody who makes $6,600,000.
Sure.
That's ridiculous. Somebody asked, and there's been many, many movements to try to tweak this and do something. We call it the John Kowalko movement. Somebody asked, and Mimi said, we might have to do a task force because it's real confusing. It's a real complicated issue, and we don't know. We've got to probably have a task force. Now, the follow-up question would be something like, so progressive income tax is complicated?
Right.
Do you know that's how the federal government does it, right? Hmm. Like it just goes up for every dollar you make over this thing, goes up. That's it. That's the task force.
We just had the whole
task force. So somebody should just raise their hand and be like, actually, in my question, we'll take care of everything the task force would cover in my follow-up question, and then it's over.
It's just we do it with the IRS. That's all you got to say.
Yeah, it's like, right. You know, it's are you from, do you, are you paying your federal income tax? And she'll probably say, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, it's all sorted out then. And there we go. And so, no one, I guess because it's like decorum, no one can be like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, is it decorum? Is that what it is? Or is it like you're never going to get like nonprofit grants if you do that? I don't know.
I don't know
why people don't do it.
It is, first of all, you're right on that, particularly and generally. I think you're right. It is, I guess it's decorum in Delaware, and it shouldn't be, because anybody who reports outside of Delaware, or if any of the legislators in Dover decide to move states and get elected in another state, they will learn that there is not that decorum, and they get asked tough questions all the time in the hallway, and they should. So that's messed up. We should.
That is a that's a Delaware way thing, because there's a guy like that's been on Chapo, who in the Ohio State House, mm-hmm. who chases people around the Ohio yeah. State House, rides his bike there. Like, you just have to.
It's normal shit.
You just have to deal with that.
Right. You raise your hand to say, I want to be an elected right. official.
And that's kind of why
that's what you have
Coast
to do
TV,
if you win that race.
Parker Selby events were, I think, so like interesting for me to watch. It was compelling.
And they were great.
Knowing what the usual vibe is right. at the knowing state at the you know the state capitol, and the decorum that Carl is talking about.
Yeah. And the decorum that Carl is talking about. Right, and it, I mean, I'll say not to. To puff myself up. I mean, people have said that I am a. I've been called rude in the past, compared to reporters
you know
in other states, I'm not.
Past.
That's the whole thing. The spectrum of reporting, I am. I think I'm pretty. But I probably should be less courteous sometimes. But that's you're right. That's the state in Delaware, the state of being in Delaware.
Hold on 1 second.
There's that. So there's that idea, and then there's the idea of asking an obvious follow up.
But yeah, no, so the follow up, it's just this idea. I've talked about it before, and maybe you can comment on just the general idea, because I don't want to get you in trouble. But it's like
it's
this pretense.
Yeah.
Like, if you break the pretense, you're doing it wrong, and I mean you're completely straightforward and courteous even.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, people, they're not, and again, I get, I'm sure you know, actually we've talked about this, I get the brunt of this all the time too, because I'll tell a joke or make fun of someone, like in the simplest way, make fun of somebody's haircut, or, you know, some issue they had, you know, 5 years ago, some legal issue they had,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and people make fun of, I got the same shit, you know, whatever, but you would think... Or I, you know, you would think the world is going to end because they heard a bad word or something in the discourse of what they're doing, and to be perfectly honest, to break character a little bit, that's the whole point of this,
right.
is to be as absolutely pointed and you know, I don't want to say shocking because it's not like a shock, but to really just. Like what Medina said, sort of like create a bit, but be myself, because I think we're not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're spinning our wheels, maybe.
Sure.
So
I've many thoughts on that. One is just the state of journalism in a small state, and I think we can improve on this, and we can encourage people. We have a lot of young reporters here who have the right mindset, have their head on straight, all the good stuff. They're smart, and they just haven't done it a lot. So people are going to err on the side of courtesy when they're inexperienced.
Discourteous. You don't have to do it the way I do it.
No, but you should be direct.
I do a certain thing,
right?
But you can do it in a way where. You don't have to be scared.
I think you have to get information as a journalist, you have to be direct and you have to be persistent. And every journalist has their own style, whether or not they use an abundance of courtesy or not. And either one, you know, whatever works for you, do it. But you got to be direct and you got to be persistent and ask the same question over and over again. And that can be perceived as rude or whatever. And that's something that just you really got to encourage young reporters to keep doing. So at all of the publications here.
What is your thought about how commentary plays into this? Talked about it before. I've talked about it with a bunch of different people. We've talked about it because we talk about like the OGs, you know, like Norm Lockman and people who were like editors, even somebody like Al Mazzetti.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody at a legacy media outlet or a popular media outlet who is like giving you commentary on a particular story or giving you like, you know, here's my take on it based on the credibility I have. Like, I think we're talking about people who have real credibility who can give you commentary on an issue.
And like very distinct voices as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to hear how this crank wants to, what thinks about
absolutely.
It, this person. Even if they're like, even if you know, they're like, yeah, this guy's out of control. I want to get a sort of a different angle on this to understand what I think. That's gone. That doesn't exist anymore.
It is. And just as a point, I did hear recently, believe it or not, the News Journal is hiring an opinion editor / writer.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I didn't want to announce anyway. This, but thank you for it's me.
The return of Matthew Albright.
It's a triumphant return. The prince returns. That would be funny if it was Albright again.
I think he's enjoying himself in Louisiana too much.
Yeah. Well, that is good news. I have a family member who submitted an op-ed kind of in connection with or on behalf of the Moores Children's Hospital and just did not receive a response at all.
Yeah.
So it had to be printed in like the Cape Gazette or something, which is still fine. But I was like, don't be let down. They probably don't have anyone manning that email box right now.
There's probably one person that mans it for all like East Coast Gannett papers.
It's a guy in Jersey.
Yeah,
there's a guy. Lex told me who it is. That's how, because Dale submitted something. Was it Dale who you were talking about?
No.
Beep this out. I don't know. No, I don't know. But it was the same thing because it's
the same thing happened. Yeah.
Because when it's actually the same guy we worked with when we did the 3-part series that Jordan Howell wrote about the East Side, mm-hmm. about the Big Quarterly and all that shit.
Right.
But it's the same. Yeah. It's like a Gannett guy or whatever in North Jersey somewhere, Asbury Park or something. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
And again, I think I do think that there are smaller outlets who do this a little better, actually.
Who do the commentary thing better?
Kind of. I mean, there's definitely problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know if you've been following this. We've been engaging with the public in the city of Dover.
Yeah.
We've been... Actually, Spotlight Delaware covered some of it.
Yeah.
The Bay to Bay Delaware State News will run pretty much, you could write you could write 500 words. If you're somebody who, you know, you go to the, now again, they lean a little heavy on like the mayor and like the city council,
mm-hmm.
but they will publish other views. Now, the issue with it is not only did they lean too heavily on like institutional voices, they also lean too heavily on like just amateurs. Like, and I'm not saying anything about a citizen should be able to get shit published. I'm glad that they do,
mm-hmm.
but like it would be more helpful in the news to get like a professional opinion on it, whatever you want to say. And that's what would be the most helpful. So, like, either I think the Cape Gazette, or, I think Bay to Bay does it, but not in the way that I mean.
I hear what you're saying. I don't know about. I mean, the profession of a professional opinion writer is valuable. It's also valuable to have the citizens put down their thoughts. But when that happens, that's why it's important to have an opinions editor who can go to that, you know, person who submitted it and say, hey, let's work through your copy a little bit. I'm not going to change the opinion at all. I want your opinion to shine through, but let's make it sing a little bit more than it does right now.
This is a Matt Albright. This is what
it is. Truly.
Yeah. We have reporters reporting on the narrative from Dover. We have people on the internet and elsewhere, sort of complaining. But we have nobody sorting out the two. That's the trick. Like Bill said, there's letters to the editor, and there's people like, ah, this is bullshit. Yeah. And then there's the narrative of Dover. Mm-hmm. But you used to have somebody being like, well, let's take a breath. This is what it is, and this give you some historical context, which, again, I'm so glad that Spotlight basically plagiarized Bill's work and then put it in today. That was good. We can Jake, I'll be sending you an invoice for that.
BCC me.
Always, buddy. But yeah, that's the issue. It's not that telling the story of what's going on is wrong. That's right. It's not soliciting ideas from just regular people to see what they're saying. That's also right. But the thing we're missing is the thing in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Is that what this is? I mean, that's what podcasts are. Here's the brass tacks is we don't have the money in journalism anymore to pay opinion writers or opinion editors. And in a conversation like this, if it spreads far enough across the state, it can move the needle and affect the conversation and through just frank conversation.
Well, that's a bullshit answer. Do you know why it's a bullshit answer? Not. Because, well, you guys don't do this. I was going to use the high school football analogy or the prom photo analogy.
Right.
But I'm not going to do that because Spotlight doesn't do that.
We could talk shit about the news journal. I'd spend enough time there.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is, I'll just say this. We spend enough time sending people out to live tweet, Dickinson versus McCain, local Pike Creek Derby, like a high school football game.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have money for something. Now, it's probably not a lot. But I mean, I would do it for cheap. But in any event, there's. I guess what I'm saying is, if there's money for anything, you have to figure out how to do it properly. Like if there's, you know, if and I'm I will say I'm very happy that Spotlight is hiring more reporters. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy that we're getting actual like news that, and I've said this before, when you used to get the newspaper, the first section would be all news, right, and you'd read the news, and you don't get that anymore. And now we're getting it again. That's nice. So
I sincerely look forward to it every morning.
Yeah, because you're getting
something. And we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. So all this bullshit is like, yeah, that's a huge step forward. Goes without saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that There's no accounting made for this other piece of it because, you know, we're going to get more of a grant if we do this other thing. If we go down and do something else that we can put on a grant application that we had, you know, did this other stuff, I'm not even saying it's not productive or that it's bad. It's probably good. But you're making a choice, back to what we were talking about before. Because of your funding choice, because of the way that you're supported, and because of politics, you've made a choice to hire more people to do other stuff. I don't think that's necessarily bad, but I think it's pretty obvious to me that you've made that choice for the reasons that I just said. And to pretend like you didn't, I think, is the problem. And that's why I don't like this idea that we don't have the money. No, you have. You're finding the money. It's just, what do you want to do with it?
So,
which is a perfectly legitimate thing.
I mean, there's two answers, because there's the example of the news journal reporting excessively on football, and then there's an example of what I think you were talking about, Spotlight. And I mean, the grant funding model, I mean, it's better to have this conversation with Allison, but she is making decisions that first we're going to hire reporters, and then we're presumably going to grow in the future in a direction that, you know, might, and again, it's her answer to answer, but that might include an opinion editor.
I'm not
criticizing her choice to start with reporters.
I'm actually not either.
Okay.
I think and I think I was trying to sort of beat around the bush, but no, the decision that you're making for the reasons that you're making it is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're, like you just said, I think it's perfectly reasonable. Yeah, we're making this decision to sort of staff up this thing with the understanding that we actually need to do this other thing too. And that's perfectly legit. But I want to have that conversation, not the conversation that we just can't find resources for that part of it. So we just have to ignore that part.
I made that statement with respect to the News Journal. And I think, again, I can't see in their books, but I would imagine they do the football coverage because that actually makes them money. Those individual stories have...
There's literally no question about
it. Right. And their assessment is that...
The pictures. Like, right. I understand that. That's probably a huge money.
So it's not they're electing to do that because they just want to do that instead of hiring an opinion editor. It's they're doing that because they want to be able to make enough money to subsidize the stuff that loses money, like investigative journal or... other kinds of journalism.
I mean, they barely do that.
I know. Anymore. That's right. That's right. But this is the
conversation
theory.
Lex and I had 6 years ago.
Sure.
And they're doing less and less and less and less and less of it.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
And I guess that's the kind of thing I'm trying to say is like, I get that there's restrictions on resources. No matter what you do, you have to figure out where you're getting resources and how you're going to use them to do whatever you're doing. But I just don't, number one, I don't want it to be an excuse. And I don't want it to be a thing that people point to so that we can ignore other stuff. Like, look, we got to make that money. And so we got to get people on high school football scores or whatever, traffic or weather, whatever. We got to do that. Okay, fine.
Rehoboth Beach in the 1890s.
Yeah, just pull some old photos.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are they going to open up a new Mission Barbecue in Smyrna?
Fucking hope so.
Look, when they zoned that place for a Lidl in Middletown, and then they didn't get it.
When was
I've been
open?
Following that story.
Thing with, I guess, like, yeah, the News Journal's conglomerate. I mean, Carl's exactly right. And you and Lex did talk about this, like, 6 years ago, about how his beat can be funded by slideshows. Because Gannett's papers, basically, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, started to compete with sloppy-looking websites like MSN.com and AOL News, where you're just inundated with banner ads and clickbait stories. And then you sort of have this like BuzzFeed component. Remember the BuzzFeed articles that were like 20 lists, like a list that's where the homecoming photos come from.
It's
kind of like BuzzFeed for old people now.
You got to click through them.
And each time you get
click through those
fractions of a cent that will then.
Well, yeah, and you can shove an ad between certain photos. Right. Yeah.
And that's what pays, for the Court of Chancery terminal fees.
We got to get Lex a Bloomberg terminal. We got to get him.
You got to get me a Bloomberg terminal first.
You know what? You're right. You deserve a Bloomberg terminal more than Lex. That guy hasn't bought a new pair of shoes in 12 years.
He would just spend the money on rollerblades.
You're right about that. Yeah, I guess part of the reason I'm so sort of like passionate about it is just because I do see some improvement.
Uh-huh.
Like, again, this is no bullshit. We're not blowing smoke about it. Mm-hmm. We said it to Jake, and we would never say anything good to him. I mean, that's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, Spotlight has filled a void that was very obvious, which was we're not getting regular news.
Let me ask you one question on that. I agree. Spotlight has added more stories to the conversation. How much of it is also with the News Journal? For me, as a reader, no longer an employee there, there will be good stories and you can't find them.
Correct.
Because they're buried by the Lidl and the Buffalo Wild Wings stories. And then you have to go, scroll actually down to find, oh, here's actually a decent quasi-investigation. So is it actually the production of the News Journal or the lack of production, or is it just the good stuff is hidden?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure it's probably a little bit of both because I see that phenomenon because obviously I read Lex.
Right.
Obviously I want to, get some stories about like local, see how they're covering local government stuff, but you can hardly find it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, the motorcyclist died in Laurel. A guy fell in a ditch.
Well, also I think it goes back to decorum. I think that there's sort of a self-censorship there, and I pick this up especially with Biden stories. Famously, I don't know if I've said this before or if it got cut from an episode or whatever, but I remember like they printed an outright lie that Biden won the Iowa caucus in 2020, when I believe he came in fifth.
Something like that.
And it was like, Bernie and Pete and somebody else.
It was just like, why lie about that?
Yeah, why?
I don't know. And I feel like, I don't know if they get too much, maybe I'm wrong, you guys correct me, if they get into the scrum about, like, in a way that, like, Coast TV did with Rep Parker Selby. Like, they don't really do that.
So,
to step on toes is my sort of argument.
I disagree.
Okay.
With the News Journal.
I disagree with the News Journal.
Your argument about the News Journal. Okay. I disagree with that.
Yeah, yeah. You would know.
Because, I think to their credit, they don't care about decorum. They don't care about making sure that somebody doesn't glare at them at the grocery store or at their cocktail party. They're not part of the Delaware community.
Yeah,
even like Spotlight Delaware. Exactly.
We're not part of
and
society.
So what they care about reporters. What they care about is clicks. Period.
Yeah,
you know, and maybe subscriptions
issue.
A little bit.
Yeah, but,
so
and
if you can get
issue,
a really good, but, if you can convince them that this really good story that I want to investigate will get you a little clicks, they'll run it. They'll run a very courageous story if they can get 15,000 people to click on it. So that's the flip side. That's just the environment we're in. There are other outlets out there that are more plugged in other places to the system, that have to worry about stepping on toes way more than the News Journal does. Hmm. The News Journal really doesn't care about that.
Yeah, their issue is more like, we got to get these clicks for
right.
Gannett.
Yeah.
Right. We got to get them.
Right.
Which, again, is a whole other problem, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Folks, we've done enough. We're going to do a little bit of patrons-only stuff that we might give you or we might not. We've talked about that. But this is enough for tonight. We've given you too much. I still see many, many people coming in as free members. That's fine. Again, that's perfectly legitimate. You want to see what's happening. You want to see what the hell is this. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Not familiar with it. Well, that's okay. But once we start dropping patrons-only material, you're not going to be able to listen to it. And if you're fine with that, then that's fine. But if you dig what we're doing, at some point you're going to have to, like, you're going to have to kick in. Even Carl knows this. Carl Baker, he knows. You got to kick in.
Am I being called out?
No, I mean, you got to kick in. How are we going to do this if you don't kick in? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we'll see. Now we're going to talk about some stuff. You're not even going to believe it. But, yeah, fuck ice. Fuck ice right in their fucking eye socket. And left is best.